So we're here with Tim this morning. Today is going to look a little bit different. Today is not the last time we're going to hear from Tim, but today it is kind of a special day. It's the last time that he's going to get to share with us as the leader of Good Life. And as we've seen in the lives of leaders that we know and love, and also leaders from the Old Testament and New Testament, that we are made by the decisions that we make throughout life. And so we've invited Tim today to kind of share some of those decisions that he's made throughout his time as a leader here at Good Life, but also some decisions that he's made throughout the course of his life that have helped to shape who he is and how he's led and how he's lived in the time that we've had to spend with him over the last 15 years, even more for me since I've known him a long time. So we're really excited to have him here with us this morning to share some of those crucial decision points with us. Here's Tim today.
And thank you. I actually really like the fact that a lot of these things we've probably encountered along the way together. We've known each other, like you said, a long time.
Yeah.
We've done a lot of years of quote-unquote ministry or life together. Mm. But I think for me, the first and foremost decision was a decision to take following Jesus seriously. When I really responded to that invitation to follow Christ, I really made what I believe was a rich discovery, and a discovery I hope people make. I think so often we're afraid of our past. And I don't think, honestly, that Jesus is that affected or interested in our past. I honestly believe Jesus is way more interested in the future. And I had a really strong thing happen when I decided to follow Jesus. I felt like he simply asked me to give him all the parts of my life, as broken and fractured as many of them were. And I remember this really, probably I'd call it a vision, but this experience I had where I just had all these broken bits and I pushed them across this table to him. And he went to work, but he handed me back this beautiful mosaic. And it was really this sense of he would take all of those broken things and use them for his glory. And so for me, discovering that, that he would restore, but he would give back newness, became a really pivotal moment for me. And then, you know, I read in the scriptures where Paul says, follow me as I follow Christ. And I remember reading that, and the first time I read it, I thought, something about that felt a little bit cocky. Like, Paul's just going, you know, I'm just like Jesus, so you can follow me as equally as you follow Jesus. And then I began to sit with that, and I thought, you know, I think what Paul was more saying is follow me in the areas that I imitate Christ. Mm-hmm. And I remember praying back then that I really wanted to be an imitator of Jesus, and realized the only way to do that was to allow, by the Spirit of God, the life of Christ to be lived out through me. And so it really began to be, I think, this endeavor. And so when I looked at the scriptures, you know, I found in Romans chapter 28 and verse 9, where Paul writes this thing and he says that from the very beginning, or from the very outset, God's purpose was that we would be conformed to Christ. So, you know, like you'd know in your faith, God takes these parts of us and he begins to mold them and shape them, but his whole desire is that we become Christ-like. And then you read his writings in Philippians 2, and, you know, Paul says there, let your attitude be the same as that of Christ, who, even though he was in the very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but he made himself nothing. And he took on human form. And being found in human form, he became a servant. And it's like this whole process of Jesus is leaving heaven and glory and everything, and then taking these deliberate steps down. And as you would know, it's so counter to the way we think as humans. Like, we're always trying to clamber for the top, and yet in Philippians 2, Jesus just is taking steps down. And that's actually hard for people to accept, I think. But we as leaders, and I think particularly as Christian leaders, should be leading but serving, and those things have to go hand in hand.
Yeah.
And so the servant part of Christ became a real thing that I felt like I wanted to be marked by servanthood. Because Jesus also himself said, I did not come here to be served, but to serve and give my life a ransom for many. But that's hard for people, I think, to see. And I've actually had times here at Good Life and in other places where you're just going about doing stuff, moving chairs or whatever we do, and people come up and go, yeah, you shouldn't be doing that. Let me do that. You're the pastor. And I try to imagine how Jesus would look at someone if they said to him, you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't be serving, you know. And I think that's probably what the disciples were trying to infer to him, like particularly Peter about washing his feet, you know. But that is the thing that is, I believe, should be the mark of Christian leaders, is a willingness to serve. That there should be no task ever that we say, that's below me.
Yeah, that's. I think that for me, even just looking at our past relationship over and over again, if I wanted to find you, you would be doing something like that. Because yeah. You wouldn't be in the office. You'd either be with people or you'd be doing something that you'd seen needed to be done.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. And I know I said it, I think I said it to you once in a conversation. You know, when people say, you shouldn't be doing it, I'm kind of like, then beat me to it.
Yeah.
Because there's no reason I shouldn't be doing it. So let's make it a race to do it first. Like, who can outserve someone else? And I just would love to see that be the mark of the church, that we really were the servants of mankind. And it's true in many areas, but I reckon we could do better. And if I could leave even that with you, I'd say make it a priority. It was a priority of Christ. Make it a priority. And I think the next one I'd say would be tenacious. And by that, I've always pictured tenacity as like this white-knuckled holding on to something for dear life. And I reckon if something is valuable, then it's worth holding on to. It's worth fighting for. And tenacity, I think sometimes we let go of stuff too soon. We don't stick it out. We don't, you know, value something enough to say, you know what, I'm gonna fight this through to the very end. And that's sometimes been a costly decision.
It sounds like you're speaking from some experience there. Like, is there something in mind that you can share with us in that, like, that you've held on to?
Yeah. Well, one recently for us, even with Good Life, was the whole building thing. Because I felt like God had spoken something to us about the going ahead. And when people disagree, they can be outspoken about those things. And I try to listen to what people have to say, but I really do try to hold fast to what I believe God is saying. And there's this tension there. But this tenacity is when you really believe he's spoken something, hold on to it.
Yeah.
And they were things that were challenging, like, because finances are always a big deal. Well, how's that going to even be provided for? And again, I felt like God spoke something of the way he would provide, but it was sort of out of left field and didn't seem to make sense. And, you know, I had someone say to me, you know, they quote the story of Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego, and Nebuchadnezzar building an idol to himself. And there were some pretty cruel things that were said. And I really did come to a place of going, man, God, if that's what I'm doing here, if I'm that self-deluded, take me out of the picture. And I don't think for a moment that's why he's shifting me. But it was this thing that in the face of that opposition, you either have to believe what you think the Lord has spoken, or you just crumble to opposition and to opinion. And so, yeah, I've had things through the years where I've really had to go to the Lord in my own space and say, is this you? If it is you, man, I'm going to hold on for dear life. And opposition sometimes, I think, isn't unhealthy.
Yeah,
it really presses us in to finding out what matters. But with tenacity, I would say, goes courage. Mm. And I've always wanted to be courageous. Jesus was a man of incredible courage. Because I think of him in the Garden of Gethsemane when he's crying out to his Father and he says, you know, if there's any alternate route, if there's any way around this, take this cup away from me, but yet not my will be done, but your will be done. And honestly, there's a spiritual fortitude or a courage to actually say that to God.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think Jesus just, you know, was, because he was God, he could say, you know, let your kingdom come and your will be done. I think there was this really dynamic courage about him. You see it in the face of the Pharisees, to say what needed to be said, in the face of the people like who were chasing after him for food or whatever, he'd just be honest with them, and that's courageous. And when people respond to him and they all leave and the disciples are going, man, that was tough, and he goes, you can leave too if you want. Like, he's almost willing to let everything go for the sake of what his Father's called him to. And that's courage. And I really believe that courage has this right understanding of fear. Fear is a good thing, but don't let fear rule you.
Yeah, that's really good.
And I think this is one thing that has really guided me, is I want to hold on courageously, tenaciously, but be aware of those warnings, to allow fear to have its right place, but don't let fear tie your back, stop you, hinder you.
Don't let it have the final word.
Exactly.
Yeah. There seems to be an audacity that comes with knowing you're going to win, but that's different than the courage that Jesus had.
Oh, yeah.
There was a cost that came with that courage.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you're kind of saying.
Well, I think it's ultimately said in, and I would have referred to it in the lead up to Christmas with joy, but where it said that for the joy set before him, he endured the cross.
Yeah.
And I think if I was to add to it, and you're not supposed to add or take away from scriptures, I know, but there's this thing of, you know, for the joy that was set before him, he tenaciously held the course and went to the cross. He courageously took a hold of what God had asked for him and he went to the cross. So for me, I feel like when we walk in this person of Jesus, there is this courage and this tenacity to hold true to who he's called us to be and what he's called us to do. One of the things I've learned in leadership that is very counter to our world, because the world says this: you lead for those three reasons. And if you've heard me speak on leadership, this is what I find. People lead for position, their title, for the power, the authority they have, or the privilege, the benefits that you get, the power, the position, the privilege. But Jesus doesn't do any of those. You go to Philippians 2 and he relinquishes all of that for the purpose that he came for. Mm. And when we discover the purpose that God has given us, called us to, we willingly relinquish those things. Because I found this, that all those three things, power, position, privilege, actually are your limiters. They don't set you free to lead, they stop you leading. You won't do something that makes you look weak if you're craving power. You won't do something that makes you look little if you're craving position. You won't do something that you're going to lose if you're after privilege or prestige. But when you're leading for purpose, there's nothing that you're not willing to do. And that's what Jesus was about.
Yeah.
And so if I could encourage anyone to anything, it would be take a hold of, you know, those values. Then beyond that, learn to keep your mouth shut. Gosh, that was a hard one for me. Learn to keep your mouth shut. Because when Jesus, even when he stands before his accusers, it says he went silently. Yeah. And it's a strange thing that, you know, again, even when you're leading and you know that you have a situation you're in and you could defend yourself because you know something that's happened or you know the backstory, and yet you sense the Lord's just going, just don't say anything. Don't defend yourself. Because in the eyes of humanity, silence is complicity. And you just know that the Lord's going, don't say anything, because you'll say the wrong thing. Yeah. And you're better to just shut your mouth than say the wrong thing.
Yeah, I think it's really easy for the accusation to come and then a spirit of offense to come up and want to defend yourself or defend a position.
Yep.
And Jesus doesn't show us that. He models something different,
yep,
which is almost antithetical to the human condition.
Absolutely.
And we want to be justified. We want to say,
yep,
what is important to us. But you're saying that sometimes Jesus says, be quiet.
Yeah, be quiet. A really wise person once said to me, let your character speak. Mm. Just keep the mouth closed. Yeah. So that was really good. But the thing that goes hand in hand with that is I really chose some time ago to believe the best. Mm. Because it's the way we can so easily take offense. I would say this, a tremendous life lesson, choose to believe the best. The classic for me, and I'm not going to elaborate on it a lot, but you know, I've done it with our leadership training. When you go into a room and the room goes silent as you walk in, you know, most times I bring that up and I go, "What? When that happens, what do you think?"
Yeah.
And most people are like, oh, man, they're probably talking about me. They're probably saying something negative. And I'm just like, well, if we actually believe the best, we walk into a room, it goes silent, and you go, oh, I'm really sorry. Did I interrupt the party planning that you were doing? Like, surely you're planning a party for me or something, and you can't talk about it, so you've gone silent. You know, just really choose to believe the best. Even when something looks bad, believe that someone did it unintentionally. Yeah. Or they didn't really mean what they said. And that way, you don't get to build up offense.
Well, and if you believe the best, it kind of puts the brakes on gossip.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And so, I guess if I was to say the decision points that shaped me, number one, genuinely follow Jesus. Mm. And believe that God's purpose is to conform you to his likeness. Humility, tenacity, courage. Believe the best. Don't defend yourself. Hold your tongue when you need to. Mm. And I really do believe if we just took a hold of some of those things, not because Tim said they were good ideas, but because I think it reflects the person of Jesus Christ. So if I could say something like that, I'd say, follow me in the ways I follow Christ. Because there's a heck of a lot of parts of Tim Lovell, as you know, through the years, that you'll go, what? Is that what Jesus is like? And you go, no, that bit wasn't like Jesus. But I think this bit is. And so as much as I'm trying, follow me like I follow Jesus. You know, and Donna is, you know, she's great for that. But she expresses hers in song. So I thought it was kind of fitting to ask her if she would sing. Mm. And knowing what's ahead for us, that there's change and there's a lot of unknown, I would just say that the heartbeat of this song is put your faith in God. Trust him for what lies ahead. Be established in your faith. Don't be anxious. And keep on with the walk. So if you'd be willing, let's have Donna sing. And then I'll bring it back and just close it with a word of prayer. Is that all right?
Great.
All right.
Emotion. it's more than enough. So be my desire. You'll be all that I seek. Trouble will always find me.
Are the words of that, that you're more than enough for me. I can get emotional with it because I know what it is to walk into the unknown with this yearning, but the strength of those words, that God, you're more than enough. So wherever we go from here, we go with that confidence. So let me pray, and we'll just close it out. Father, thank you. I so often think of the psalmist's words where he says, God, what is man that you're even mindful of him? Created a little lower than the angels, but yet crowned with glory and honor. And God, you don't just save us for the sake of saving us. You save us, you deliver us, and then you begin that work of conforming us to Christ, that somehow we get to carry that life, that liberty, that light into other people's lives. And thanks for entrusting that to us. God, I do commit the years ahead. God, I thank you for the work that you've started in Good Life and you've started in so many lives. And we just look to you and say, God, bring about your glory in your completion of all that you have purposed to do. May we truly be a people who are marked by courage, by tenacity, by humility, by servanthood, by truly that willingness to be conformed to the likeness of Jesus. May we be a people of faith. And grant us your peace. In Jesus' name. Amen. Thanks, man.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Tim.